On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Come Monday, it'll be alright.
Good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, whatever.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. My name is actually in the title of the show. I am Becky Johnson. Yep, I think my parents wanted a girl. They didn't get one. All right. Get off my back already, will you? Welcome to the program. Sit back, relax. I'll take it from here. I'm like a bus driver. You don't have to drive, I'll do it. Is this Monday already? Seems like yesterday was just Sunday. Isn't that amazing how that happens? I don't understand it. I guess you're wondering why I asked you all here today. It's because I'm going to do a show for you right now. It's going to be entertaining and fantastic. Can I live up to that? No way. And that's our theme song. I think I've made that point. That's enough. Thank you so much. Theme song by Justin there. What a wonderful guy. Jason Shaw is actually his name. Did I say Justin? It was Jason. The brain cells are taking over and losing. It's not good. Well, welcome to the show. Last night I was watching 60 Minutes. I wonder how long that show actually is. I don't think it's 60 minutes long. With the commercials, I don't think it's 60 minutes. They should rename the show to 48 minutes because I think that's what it really is. Anyway, Anderson Cooper, whom I can't tolerate on New Year's Eve, did an in-depth interview, or an in-depth interview, with Harry. That Harry and Meghan guy. Prince Harry of Cornwall, of Sussex. I don't know what the hell that stuff is. I've never followed the royal stuff. I ate royal pudding and pie filling when I was a kid, but that's it. Other than that, not into the royal thing too much. It's a little pretentious, perhaps. What an odd thing. In this day and age of equality, the British people are still bowing to bloodlines. It's odd. It's just very odd. And I think they know it's odd. It's just that it's been going on for so long, they don't know how to stop it. Anyway, I don't know. If you don't live on this planet, maybe you don't know what I'm talking about, but if you do live on this planet, you're pretty much aware that Prince Harry doesn't get along with his father, now King Charles, and his brother, Bill, William, whatever, nor his stepmother, Camilla Parker Bowles. Sounds like a collection of China. Did you get the Camilla Parker Bowles? No, but I got the saucers and the dinner plates. They're fantastic. It's a dysfunctional family, to say the least, at this point. So I guess in the similar tradition of the Kardashians, we are drawn into dysfunctional family drama. And I don't know why, but we are. So last night, Anderson Cooper's, they aired the thing where he sat down with Prince Harry. And Meghan wasn't there. Meghan didn't show up, I guess. And Harry continued his poor me dysfunctional family tour. Look, the guy's been through a lot. His mother died in a car crash. He was beloved by the entire world, apparently, in the midst of a dysfunctional family that never liked her. Obviously traumatic. We heard in this interview about how traumatized he was by his mother's death and how confused and how the royal family just made it like so much worse and all that stuff and him not getting along with his brother and blah, 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 blah. I mean, I'm sorry about that. I really am for the loss of your mother. Beyond that, don't really give a shit, to be honest with you. Then he went into the, and I'm not making light of this because it's a horrible thing, but he went into the drugs and alcohol that one does when they're going through that stuff. And then he says that Meghan kind of turned his life around and everything is wonderful. I'm still saying, no matter what, you know, how much horrible family drama that is, I'm still saying, Harry and Meghan, just get on with your lives. You have plenty of money. You can do anything you want. Open a number of companies just like the Kardashians did and get on with your life. And if denouncing the royal family, just like do it and shut up. Stop. I don't understand people that, you know, I need to shove their personal lives into my face. Well, Ron, you don't have to watch it. Yeah, but it's out there. It's out there. It's like the Kardashians. It's like Bruce Jenner turning into, what is it, Kylie? I don't even know what name he chose. Bruce Jenner, you know, he wants to pursue his own life now as a woman or whatever. And yeah, go do it. But now instead, you got to be in my face about it. And you, I mean, it's like, pursue your life. It's your talent that should be recognized, not your hardships. Come on, man. Get a life. Move on. Why did Anderson Cooper sit down with Prince, quote-unquote, Harry? I mean, quote-unquote, Prince, then Harry. I quote-unquoted the wrong part. Why did he sit down with him? Because Prince Harry is releasing a book. And this is his book tour. And what is the book about? It's the Poor Harry Tour. How poor Harry had such a horrible life. And he did. I get it, poor Harry. I get it. Okay. And then he married Meghan and they didn't like her because they're making racist comments and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, okay, it's horrible. But then move on with your lives. You don't need that shit, Harry. Nor you, Meghan. But he's written a book, you see. So, oh, okay, now I get it. And it's not even a book. It's his memoirs. The hell's the difference? Come on, man. Yeah, here's my life. Find it interesting. Buy the book. I mean, Harry, seriously. Come on. Open up a men's clothing place or something. Here's something I don't understand. I really don't understand this about the English people. And they're nice people. I like them. Because they speak English. So I can understand what they're saying all the time. Here's what I don't understand about them, though. This guy's Prince Harry. He's a part of the royal family. And what do? They send him off to Afghanistan in war. I mean, you know, and they make him a pilot, helicopter pilot or something, or so he's flying planes and shooting stuff, and he's actually in combat in Afghanistan, Prince Harry. And I'm wondering, what are you doing? This is a prince, and you send them off to danger? I thought you guys protected each other. No, we're not sending the prince to war. He's the prince. How can we say he could die? I mean, that would be horrible. We can't send him to war. But they do that. I don't quite get that part of it. I'm not sure. But Harry, you've got a nice wife, apparently. She seems quite nice. I watched her on Deal or No Deal with Howie Mandel, you know, picking the cases to win $1 million. A fine, intelligent show. She's did a wonderful job. Nobody unlatched a suitcase to reveal the little card inside that said how much money you picked. That's not in your case. You unlatched that case from the top. Megan, you did that so well. You are a professional suitcase unlatcher. In other words, on Deal or No Deal, you very nicely unpacked your baggage. In real life, your baggage remains unpacked. She was in a few movies, all bee movies, movies about bees. Not very good. An actress, yeah, you're okay. You know, you're not better than anybody else. I guess you know worse. I mean, maybe you're a little worse, whatever. That's not your, you know, Megan, it's not your thing. So do something with your intelligence and your career. And Harry and Megan, you know, go off into the sunset holding hands. Have the happiest life you can have. If you're that happy now, and you have the childs, then what are you hanging out for here in the world of poor me? Isn't life horrible? I'll never forget my past because I can't get beyond it. I think you can afford some pretty good therapy here, Harry. Go for it. Stop writing books. Get off of this misery tour, please. Stop it. Just stop it. Just stop it. Again, you've had a very, very difficult childhood, extremely difficult, more difficult and odder and weirder and tragic than almost all of us. But I think one would say to another that is concerned, get some help and get beyond this tragedy and enjoy your life, Harry. I mean, just watching him spout, you know, it's like, okay, that sounds horrible. Like, what do you want me to do about it? Buy the book, I guess. Okay, well, that make you feel better, Harry? Well, no, actually it won't. Well, then why would I buy it? You just told me everything that's in it. I don't understand that about book tours. They go out on tour, they get interviewed, and they do television and radio and that kind of thing. And they tell you all about the book and what's in it and all the really interesting parts. And then they say, go buy the book that I just talked about. Now you don't have to read it, but go buy it. It's like watching a coming attraction trailer, they call it, for a movie. And it's exciting, and there's a lot of action or some funny lines or something, and it really attracts you to go see the movie. And then you go to the movie theater, and it gets dark, and you pay $2,000 for a seat, and you watch the full movie. And when it's over, you say to yourself, excuse me, all the best parts of the film were in the coming attractions. Everything else kind of sucks. So why did I come and see the film if they already showed me the best parts? And it doesn't make any sense. Well, Ron, because I have to lure you to see the film. Yeah, but in doing so, I don't have to see the film now. I don't know. Coming attractions also make me realize that I really shouldn't be seeing the film because it looks like it's going to suck. That's the other thing. When I read the reviews, that Rotten Apples, Acidic Tomatoes thing, I don't know what you call that, where they rate it by percentage. That was 87% good, says the five people that saw it. When they rate it, I always liked the ones that they thought were horrible, and the ones I thought were great, I didn't care for it. It was okay. But it's the ones that like 30, 40% that are horrible. I go, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty good. So it doesn't mean anything to me. Oh, man. How are you? How you doing? What year is this? Quick. No, not 2021. You got that wrong. No, no. It's 2027. Is it? No, not that high? Okay, good, good. I'm glad it's not that high. I'm still adjusting. I'm to the point where I don't care what year it is. It doesn't really make any difference. They're all pretty much the same. They start with January, they end with December, gets dark about the same time every year on certain dates, and same people walking the planet, you know, nobody gets any better, nobody gets any wiser, nobody learns any lessons. So, like, I don't know, not really, I don't really understand the point. I guess it's so that calendar companies can sell their products. Other than that, I'm not really getting the point of this calendar thing. I don't know who started the calendar, probably some person there from the Middle Ages or something, or maybe around the time of Jesus. They said, hey, let's walk through the desert. Okay, when do you want to meet? I don't know. We don't have a calendar. I know. We don't even know what day this is. Well, let's start doing the calendar thing, shall we? Maybe it goes back to the cave people. I didn't say caveman, by the way, because that's sexist. There were females at that time. I know we didn't discuss them much, but there were female cave people. They used to write on the walls. I mean, how tacky can you get? Some people are still doing that in the bathroom stalls. But that's what cave people did. They wrote on the walls. They didn't have paper, I suppose. Well, they couldn't figure out how to do that. So they wrote on the walls, like Johnny is a schmuck. Bobby fucked 25 cave people last night. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they wrote on the walls. Apparently, there were some pictures of people from outer space. That was pretty crazy. But I think they all kind of took hallucinogenic drugs back in the cave times, because there was nothing invented yet. And it was probably pretty horrible, even worse than your life, Harry. They had nothing to do. There was no television. There was no radio. There were no books. They had fire, but that kind of didn't do too much, really, in the long run after 2 minutes. Okay, I watched the fire. Now what? So they wrote on the walls, and that's all they had. And, I mean, I guess they were bored. They must have done hallucinatory drugs. They must have discovered those back in the cave days. There was so much time to discover things. What else would you do? What else would you do? There were no nasal inhalers. I mean, what did you do? If you had a headache, what would you do? There's no aspirin. It's rough, man. You want rough? Those are rough days. And no, as I've said so many times before to stupid people, there were no dinosaurs outside of the cave trying to get into the cave. There were other animals, like beavers, but that's about it. I think there were birds. But there were no dinosaurs. Human beings and dinosaurs never existed on the planet at the same time. There were millions and millions of years in between those two existences. So stop your silly concept that the Flintstones was a documentary. I mean, it was not. It was not. It was a cartoon show. I think, actually. I'm not sure now. No, I'm not sure. Now I'm not sure. Maybe the Flintstones was a documentary. I think that's what some of the far-right Republicans were trying to convince me last night after a couple of beers. If you follow politics, there's a new Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Very impressive. Very impressive, Kevin. Took 15 or 16 votes to get you to bang the gavel. I don't know. There's the word pathetic comes up somewhere in that whole thing. I don't know where, though. I don't know where. Pathetic seems to come up a lot these days. I think that's the word of the year, pathetic. A lot of things are pathetic. You might be pathetic. I certainly might qualify. Depends. You know, pathetics in the eyes of the beholder. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a guest coming up momentarily, but first we have commercial words because obviously you're not going to pay for this. So somebody else has to. And, well, here's the people that do.
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender. But I hung up my boxing gloves to open the area's favorite new restaurant.
It's Headshots, Bobby.
Headshots. Hey, this month we're starting something new at Headshots. It's our all-you-can-eat, nothing-but-meatball brunch. That's right. You can come to Headshots and load up on all your favorite sausage.
Meatball?
Right. Meatballs. It doesn't matter what kind of chicken you like.
Meatball?
What kind of meatball you like. We got it at the all-you-can-eat, nothing-but-typewriters.
Meatballs.
Meatballs. Nothing but meatball buffet. You heard me right. No pasta. No cacciatore. No lasagna. Just delicious lasagna.
Yeah, meatballs.
Meatballs. However you like them. Traditional. Hot and spicy. Stuffed with cheese. Covered in marinara. My mouth is watering just thinking about eating all these cheerleaders.
Holy sh... meatballs. Meatballs.
Eating all these meatballs myself. So what are you waiting for? Get on down to Headshots and see if you can eat more General Gao's chicken than me, Bobby Marone. That last one was supposed to be meatballs too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff Allworth joins us now. He is the author of The Beer Bible. That's right. Before there was life, there was beer. And here it is. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Jeff, this is not only the first Beer Bible, it is number two. So we even have updates on the beer, I guess, because the beer world is changing rapidly, isn't it?
It really is. And actually, it's nice to talk to you, the kind of the epicenter of change that sparked this new edition started right there in New England. So.
Yeah,
it's appropriate that I'd be talking to you.
It is appropriate, and I am the catalyst for you writing the book, quite obviously. Beers, my God, when I was growing up, there was just were a couple of brands. They were very popular. Now there's like all kinds of craft beers. And what's the difference between a craft beer and a beer that most people might be used to?
There's not really a fundamental difference. Beer is beer. one of the foundational experiences I had when I was writing about beer was going to St. Louis to the big Budweiser brewery.
Yeah.
And having traveled all over Europe already and seeing small breweries and mid-sized breweries and, you know, 400-year-old breweries, walking into that brewery, and expecting to see, I don't know what I expected to see, but something like lab, men in lab coats, synthesizing beer somehow. No, it was just a brewery. They're just making beer. They're making a familiar kind of beer that is maybe not that interesting to a lot of people,
right. But
it's just beer. The craft beer movement, when it came along, was an antidote, much in the way that, good cheese was an antidote to Velveeta, or Starbucks was an antidote to Folgers. Craft beer was an antidote to mass market lagers.
Yes.
We had, artisans making batches of beer in these little vessels and making them out of whole ingredients and in traditional ways.
Yeah.
And that's how it got started. And, they were very proud of what they did. And the word craft beer was a way of distinguishing what they were doing from the large brewers. But fundamentally, it's all beer.
I think the craft, IPA, as it was called, they kind of lit the spark underneath the larger manufacturers in the sense of having peanut butter-flavored beer, chocolate-flavored beer, similar to what happened with the vodkas. You know, there were no flavored vodkas at a point. Now it's going to get every flavor under the sun, and every manufacturer is in the game. And so it's like opened the door, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, you know, capitalism is a funny thing.
Yes. Always.
It tends to go towards the mainstream, but the mainstream becomes boring after a while, and then you need to feed that with new innovation. Mm-hmm. So craft beer is sort of like the minor leagues in a way, you know, it's where all the talent comes from.
Interesting. Very interesting. The book itself, the Beer Bible, is that it's about the size of the Bible, Jeff. It's quite an undertaking. It's chock full of everything you can imagine about beer, the history thereof, every type, where it comes from. And there are also some pretty interesting illustrations that go way back and kind of give you a love affair that people have with beer.
Yeah, I hope I reflected that love affair. Beer has been around. The more we learn about beer, the more we realize it was around for thousands of years before humans settled down to start civilization. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's one of the most ancient things humans have done. We've had this love affair for a long time. It's not just a product, you know. It's a life of drinking and making the beer and mm-hmm. growing the ingredients. People feel about beer very differently than if they feel about, you know, typical consumer products. They have a real romance around it. So I did try to capture all that. And it's, of course, it's ancient. So a lot of the traditions go back, you know, as really as far as we can see.
Did it start in Germany, actually, because we're so familiar with the European beers?
You know, it's going to be hard to identify exactly where the first beer was brewed, but the earliest evidence we have is in an area that's now in Turkey. There's an archaeological dig that goes back to 10,000 BC there, at a place called Göbekli Tepe. And it was a feasting site, and people would come together periodically, and they found evidence of beer there. And this is, you know, this is 5,000 years before civilization started. So whether that's the oldest or just the oldest we have evidence for, it's hard to say, but it's ancient. And wherever grains have grown on the planet, people have made beer. Yeah. So it's part of who we are.
I was taken by the first page of your book. It is so sincere that I nearly choked up. You dedicate the book to a very special person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. He, you know, he was like so many dads. He drank mass market lagers. Uh-huh. You know, I grew up and he would often have a can of beer. And when I was a little kid, he let me sample his beer. You know, most mm-hmm. people have a similar story.
Sure.
For most people, they didn't like the taste of the beer. I think maybe there was something, you know, foreshadowing of future events. I actually really liked the taste of the beer. Then, you know, later I didn't put this in the book, but, you know, when I first snuck beer, he caught me and he said, well, you know, I got caught. I don't know why you thought you'd get away with this.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have a great connection and I owe a lot to that man.
It's just that connection that you had, when you expressed that in the first page of the book, that's what some things do in life. You go back to these moments where a parent introduces you, your first beer was with your father. That's kind of like, wow, that's life, man. That's not beer necessarily. It's life. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I would ask you what your favorite beer is, but probably not appropriate unless you want to answer.
You are correct. It's impossible for me to just choose one. I and the more I write about them, the more I appreciate them, and I feel like they're all my favorites.
Yeah.
So yeah, I couldn't guess.
Yeah, your reviews are incredible. Sports Illustrated, Food and Wine, Beer Advocate—they're all calling this the Bible that it is, and it is the Beer Bible. And if you're into beer, know anybody that has, this is indeed the Bible. It's a religious piece of work is what it is. Jeff, it's fascinating. It's available everywhere, I assume.
Yes, it is. It should be available at your local indie or at the big online sellers as well, of course.
And how do people follow you and keep in touch and website and all that kind of social talk?
All right. Well, you can find me at Beervana on Twitter or Jeff.Allworth on Instagram, or you can go to my website, beervanablog.com, and there's all my writing, links to my book, and my upcoming book tour, which will which will take me to New England. So if you want to see me in the Boston area or up in Maine, I will have stops there.
Wonderful. Jeff Allworth, it's been a pleasure speaking to you today. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.